So this is where it gets complex because I was molested at a young age, right? I've had to work with this weird thing of going, did that make me gay? Or was that, did that happen because I was gay? I since have let go of that. It's not about why it happened. I just go, well, it happened. I don't care if someone doesn't like me because I'm gay. It's none of my business what they think of me. The same gendered couples and trans couples and all that that I know of that live quiet lives,
yeah.
Those who are not connected to that rainbow community,
yeah.
Are the happiest ones of them all. The ones that are most connected to the rainbow are the ones who are angry, constantly in drama, constantly battling with everybody around them. And they will tell you that they're constantly struggling for all of us. I don't see what a rainbow pavement does for me. I don't see what a pride festival does for me.
Before you got to 40, from 19 to 40, what were you doing?
I was such a fake person up until that point. Like, so much of my life was built around trying to become those people wanted me to be, or those people wanted me to be, or some kind of picture I had in my head of who I should be. And it took me to 40 to realize that my entire life before up until that point was completely fake. I have not chosen anything in my life. That was an awakening. Relationships particularly are really important for this because I'm up to my 19th relationship now. So I'm an expert at them. I'm very good at starting relationships. I'm really good at ending them. I'm not really good at keeping them. And that's been my problem. We had to learn how to communicate. We had to learn about each other before we learned how to make love. And that was a vast, vast difference.
What is your happiest memory? Giving a shout out to our sponsor for today, the City of Palmerston. Just want to give our sponsor, who is not only holding it together, the community, but also giving back to podcasts like ours and wanting to see the community grow, wanting to see the people in the community grow. Welcome to the Discover You podcast. You're joined here with Joel Benicia. We've got today a very special guest for you, a man well known around Darwin. I won't say too much about who he is and what it's all about. Today's episode, you're going to find out. We're going to have a deep conversation about his journey and how he got where he is. And we're going to find out things that you may not know. And let me introduce you to the man himself, Dante St. James. Dante, well, how are you?
Well known. That sounds like I'm appearing on the NT News front page a little bit more than I'd like to. What have I disgraced myself with? Why am I? Is that notorious? More notorious, do you think?
Oh, man. Always a good time to have a good chat with you. I think you've got so much insights on so many different things. But today, forget the insights. We want to get to the deep part of Dante, truly understand. I think a lot of people know you as this figure that is always posting on LinkedIn. If you open your LinkedIn right now, you'll see his post.
I like the first thing people see on LinkedIn every day. That's scary.
But today, we're going to go beyond LinkedIn. We're going to go beyond social media. We're going to go beyond all the Kickstarter stuff you do. You know, Discovery Podcast is all about discovering you, and today we're discovering Dante. So Dante, let me ask. If I asked you the question and say, who is Dante?
Go straight for the biggest question, right?
We're going to start big.
No, Dante is someone who is incredibly on mission, incredibly focused upon the one thing that I've reckoned I was put on this world to do. And that everything in my life that you'll see from LinkedIn, from this, from everything I do, makes complete sense when you understand what that one thing is that I believe I was born to do.
What is that one thing?
To help businesses save the world.
Do you believe that business has saved the world?
I believe that only business can save the world.
All right. You know, this is the first topic. Let's dig into that. Mm. How did you come to that understanding?
Well, it came from a few things. So if I go back to, say, 2014 was the first time I think I had a bit of an awakening of sorts. 2014. So I was 40 years old, funnily enough. 2014, so 40 years old, that typical, you know, change of life. You hit a milestone birthday, you know.
Yeah.
When you turn 20, you would have remembered that when you turned 20, it was like, well, I'm old now, help. And then I got to 40 and realized, wait, am I meant to have all my shit together by now?
Yeah.
And I realized I didn't. And I just ended a relationship with someone that I'd moved to Sydney to be with, who had a whole other relationship at the same time that with me. And it was just crazy. Anyway, crazy, crazy story. And so I went, I found just an ad came up on Facebook for a men's group. And I was living in Sydney at the time.
Yeah.
And this men's group was like, they call it the Sydney Men's Circle. And I was like, that sounds interesting. I don't know what it's about, but it's literally in the same suburb where I was living. I was like, okay, I'll go along and see what this is like. And so part of that was a process that led to being very connected with a group of very, very, very men who were, they didn't deal with this surface level stuff of life. Like from the minute you walked in, you went deep. Kind of like we're doing now. The first question you're asked when you walk in there, it isn't asking how you are. It goes deep and you go, whoa, okay. And it shocks you. And then I went to their initiation weekend, and their initiation weekend was where I had this first kind of awakening about who I was as a person.
Just when you're saying initiation weekend, people might think I'm Illuminati, man. This guy's is joining a cult. Initiation weekend.
I'll tell you, I felt like that. So imagine, right, you this is great, because you turn up at this camp in the middle of the southwest Sydney in the bush, like on a rural property, and you're told to bring a great big platter of food. And you're like, okay, we're going to have a big feast and all that. So you hand over your platter of food and you're guided through a process. Yeah. And this process is you are signed in, you sign away your rights, basically. If you get harmed here, we don't get sued. And then the first thing you do, you go over to Uncle, and Uncle welcomes you to country and wants to know a little bit about you. And then you move on to a next station. And then somebody, as you move through, you're kind of unpacking a little bit of who you are before you then sit in this giant circus tent. And you're in a circle of about 50 other guys all sitting around where it's like, we don't know what's going to happen here. And over the weekend, you're kind of almost to the point of starvation where you're just given enough food just to function. You're sleeping in tents. It's cold. You have to have cold showers in the middle of winter, which wasn't pleasant. But the whole idea is to break you down. It breaks you down so that you can then start to rebuild yourself. And for me, that was where I realized that I was such a fake person up until that point. Like so much of my life was built around trying to become either what those people wanted me to be, or those people wanted me to be, or some kind of picture I had in my head of who I should be. Mm-hmm. And it took me to 40 to realize that my entire life before up until that point was completely fake. Every relationship I'd ever have, I never consciously chose to have. I just fell into them. I never chose a partner. They chose me. I went along with it. I never chose a job. They chose me. I went along with it. I never chose friends. They chose me. I just went along with it. So that awakening really was, well, who are you? And that who are you basically came down to, I'm absolutely no one and nothing. I have not chosen anything in my life to be. So therefore, I am nothing. I'm worth nothing. If I was to disappear on this earth tomorrow, my mum and dad would be sad, but nobody else would give up. No one would care. I had zero impact on anything or anyone. That was an awakening.
Wow.
To realize that apart from mum and dad, no one would care.
And so run us through 40 years old, before you got to 40, let's look at life from the age of 18 years old. You mentioned early on before that you left home at the age of 19, right? From 19 to 40, what were you doing?
Studying, went to university, wanted to become a doctor, became a doctor, was terrible at being a doctor.
Are you a doctor?
Was a doctor. Was definitely not now. Oh no, don't trust me with anything to do with medical advice. You will, holy crap, you'd never no.
Yeah.
I haven't killed anybody, but I think if you took my medical advice now, don't.
So you went through, because being a doctor is not an easy journey.
It's an eight year journey.
So you went through all that, came out of it, and still realized I'm not fulfilled.
It felt like I was asleep for those 8 years, because what I was doing was I also at the same time as studying a very high level thing is that I also had this ridiculously rebellious streak about me that I'm not going to have a hex debt at the end of this. I'm not going to have a higher education debt. I'm not going to rely upon my parents to live at home. So pretty much from about 6 months into going to uni, I moved out of home, moved into a place with with a weird group of people, which was fantastic. They were awesome people, but those people were involved in things that a medical student probably wouldn't want to associate themselves with. So I was in a situation where I was desperately wanting to pay my way through life. And so I worked so many jobs. Like I started off working at Sizzler, when that existed, you know, a seafood steak restaurant, because, you know, that would give me at least one meal a day when I was working with them. So if I was hungry at night, it's okay. When I finish, I can get a plate of salad bar and I'd be fine. So I was working as everything was strategic and calculated. I'll work there because I get free food from there. I'll work there because that gives me staff discount in all the Meijer and Coles and Kmart chain. Therefore, I'll be able to afford to buy things that I need. So I made all those decisions very strategically. I was a very calculated young man. But at the same time, I was burned out by the time I was like 22, like completely and utterly burned out.
Very calculated, and yet you felt like you didn't really start living until you turned 40.
No, I was doing so much stuff. I was doing, dating, you know, and at some points where I needed more money, I knew how to get more money.
Yeah.
And I did things. I was a young man with a great body, let's put it that way. So I knew, and these days you got OnlyFans. We didn't have the internet back then. Equipment. And so I was able to use my body to do things that would make me money.
OnlyFans people are becoming rich quick.
If only we had it back then. But the beautiful thing is that there's no proof that I ever did it. That's the beautiful part of it. It was the 90s. We didn't have mobile phones. Yeah, we didn't have cameras. No one could record anything because there's nothing to record it on.
Oh, so we were born in the wrong generation.
Yeah. So the 90s were a wild, wild time, but you'd never know it because there's no proof.
Oh, man. And so when people say, oh, my generation, we were different, it was just wasn't recorded. Nah. That's all.
Nah, it's just, yeah, we were different because there's no proof otherwise. So we can tell you, well, kids these days, they don't know how good they have it. And I was like, yeah, we also had it pretty good too in some ways.
Yeah. So 22, you've got a really calculated life, looking for ways to get free stuff, this free here, trying to skip your way through life.
Mm.
And then what happened from there?
I graduated and I went off to be a doctor.
And how long were you a doctor for?
3 years. And I went, I can't do this. So I went into psychiatric medicine.
Yeah.
For a guy who has no sense of self, doesn't have any sort of idea of who he is, and was also at the time going through the whole thing of like, oh, crap, I'm not into girls. That's going to complicate life.
When did you realize that?
Oh, gosh, probably like it probably came as early as like 13.
No.
And didn't really do anything consensually until I was about 19.
Yeah.
There's a whole other story behind that. But yeah, by the time I actually did something about it, I went, oh, okay, all right, this is going to hurt. This is going to hurt my life. So I sort of played around in the, let's just say I played around the minor leagues for a while with that, but never went fully pro.
Yeah.
But it's, I then got to the point where everything just collapsed because I was burnt out from working 3 jobs, doing other things as well, and taking substances to power that, because you can't study to become a doctor. You can't work 3 jobs. You can't be finishing at like 4 a.m. in the morning, waking up at 7 o'clock to be able to go into uni and do study without something breaking. Doesn't matter how young you are. You can't do that for years and years and years before something breaks. You're going to break. Your body, your mind, your spirit's going to break and you're gone. Yeah, you become completely useless. So about 22, I started to realize, and about 25 is when it really fell apart. And so I found myself in a charismatic church, which was very unexpected for me.
Hold on. Just before you jump into that, how did you find yourself in a church?
I was working with a girl who I had got on really, really well with, and we had lots of, like, you know, those friends you can have late night conversations with that go everywhere and anywhere. And and she was sort of telling me how she'd, you know, gone to this church in Sydney, and I was like, oh, okay. And as someone who's very curious about all these things, I was like, well, tell me about it. And she said, oh yeah, well, you probably think it's a bit weird, but people dance and they sing and all that, and I'm picturing a whole bunch of white people trying to dance, which is not a pretty look at any time.
Oh, yeah.
But it was, but I also, you know, I had expectations of what this might be. It felt very like revival tent of the 1930s kind of style. So like, okay, well, said, yeah, you should come along. You know, just, you know, if it's not for you, it's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, you might get something out of it. And so, of course, I went along, and as a young man who was completely lost and didn't know who I was ripe for the picking, wasn't I? Like the messages were just like it's hitting straight at me.
From,
you know,
the door, they receive you even nicely.
Welcome. Even the come to Jesus music at the end had the lyrics that were specifically geared just for a lost soul like me. So of course I went up and got saved and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, you got saved.
I got saved. I've been saved a few times since then.
Oh. Save, be saved.
I'm like the guy who can't swim, who keeps hopping in the ocean and having to be saved all the time. The idea is you get saved and then you do something about it. I was very good at getting saved and very bad about doing anything with that.
And so when you came back, you're like, you're
going to
get saved again.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So 5 years later, I was back in again. It's like, I'm back again. Jump in the water.
What, you got baptized multiple times?
Oh, man. I baptized twice in two different churches. Because, of course, like, I was baptized as an infant, like christened. Yeah, like, christened. I don't count that as real because I didn't have any choice in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sprinkle a little bit of water from some old man on me. It sounds disgusting. But I was Presbyterian. Then I was like with the Sydney Christian Life Center, which went on to become what is now Hillsong.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, you were in Hillsong?
I was a Hillsong boy for a bit, but before it was actually Hillsong.
Oh.
And then later on it became Hillsong, and I went back again when it was Hillsong and got saved all over again.
All the way in Sydney, eh?
Yeah, this is all in Sydney.
That would have been the main branch.
Oh, it was the Hills Christian Life Center, but they're the one that planted them, so the precursor to Hills. It was the one before that. So the one where, Brian Houston, who was the founder of Hillsong, his father Frank, who we don't talk about because he was a very bad man. He did some really bad things.
You, like, I don't know. I don't know them personally like that.
Yeah.
You were there at the actual
church. I was there at the church when Frank Houston was, it was found out about what he'd done with, it's a trigger warning, but he'd done some bad things. And it was caught.
In your own time.
Yeah. Google that. And, that was, I guess, oh gosh. So that was when I ended my relationship with the church. Because when everything, the man who was literally doing this sermon and calling me to Jesus that first time around, when that man is that kind of man, you go, well, everything's fake, everything's real, nothing's real. Nothing. And these very apostolic kind of churches where you got a very charismatic leader whose authority is never questioned, who is the extreme leader, they're not subjected to anyone but God, that person... With great power comes great responsibility, right?
Correct.
And when that power has fallen and there's a vacuum left after that, the collateral damage is the people who followed him.
Well, wasn't he trying to get you guys to follow Jesus and not follow him?
And therefore, you get into the trouble with most of these, what I would call almost like YouTube churches, right?
Yeah.
They're led by people who they need you to follow them. So we saw it happen then Brian Houston, who ran Hillsong after that. It was very much about him, the cult of personality. He planted a church in New York City, which came a celebrity senior pastor there. Justin Bieber became a member of that church. And so it became a cult of personality. So it was less about, you know, come to Jesus, more like come to church and listen to us. And if you've got any issues or questions with that, just keep them to yourself. Don't ask questions.
Oh, they wouldn't even let you.
Just follow.
So if you started questioning things and calling them to be accountable for different things.
You are not submitting to the authority that was placed upon you by God.
And so you'll be alienated.
Yeah. So the end thing was me. I got very disillusioned, asked a lot of questions. And they put me into a program where I was buddied up with new people. So like, oh, okay, cool. Don't know what that's got to do with my questions, but you've made me busy. So what you found that you'd have like Monday night, you'd have something, you'd have choir practice. Tuesday night, we'd have a cell group. Wednesday night would be something else. You'd have your whole life filled with church activities. Keeps you busy. If you're busy, you don't question.
Yeah. Damn. That's a very interesting angle.
Yeah.
I've never seen it like that, but.
It's not everybody's experience of that church. Like there's some people, I've got friends now who go there and they're beautiful people who did not have that experience. I had that experience, but that's not the usual experience.
Well, your experience needs to be, is your experience like...
Well, I'm not the only one. There's many of us had that experience.
And so, well, I'm trying to understand that experience because I've had many chats with many different people from different churches, charismatic and so forth. And I'm always curious to understand what the experience is going to that church. And then your experience, I've heard that from a couple people who have felt the same way about Christianity as a whole and a lot of these mega churches. And so it didn't catch me off guard, but it was interesting the way you laid it out, that they fill up your week so that you don't have to question. And so you're there, your faith started there. So obviously if the leader has fallen because of whatever they got involved into, that would have questioned you.
He's the authority placed upon me by God himself. God placed him in authority over me.
Who said that?
So, well, that's what the model of those churches are. Like, you think about the Catholic Church, right? The Catholic Church is the Pope. The Pope is God's exclusive authority on earth.
Yeah.
And then he sends the authority down through the bishops and the cardinals and all the churches and the priests. Same thing with these other churches. But when you've got less layers between you and that pastor, so you've got yourself, you've got a cell group leader, then you've got a cell group leader who goes to a team leader then is under one of the associate pastors, and then the associate pastor is one of 12 that are under the senior pastor. So you've only got a few levels.
You can bypass those levels if you know how to.
Well, like if your relationship with God is with God, then you don't really need any of those levels, do you? You just go straight to the source.
Correct.
So to me, Christianity isn't the problem.
Yeah.
Even the churches are not the problem.
Your experience, obviously.
It's lost people like me were the problem because we found that experience because we were looking for easy answers from someone who could tell us how to live, what to do, and how to be.
Hold on.
Because I was messing up. We went there.
You just hit the jackpot there. Hold on.
We went there.
You say that again. Whoa. So, as a lost person that's desperate to get answers, really fast and really quick answers, you ended up submitting to something you shouldn't submit to.
Exactly.
Because that was the shortcut.
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like a shortcut to begin with.
Yeah. I was looking for the shortcut. I was looking at the trick, the tip, the hack. I was looking for the TikTok before there was a TikTok. I was looking for the TikTok way to get things done. Ooh.
30 seconds. Exactly. And then obviously that comes with a price.
The price was, we go for a biblical parable here. I'm not a Christian in any way, shape or form, but I know all the stuff, right? So I studied it. That's another area. So you think about the parable of the parable of the sower, where you sow seeds, right? Now, if you had the properly sifted seeds, you sow those seeds and they root deeply and they grow up beautiful wheat that you can grow. But if they're not properly sifted and you're just sowing seeds, there's weeds seeds in those as well.
Correct.
So what happens with the weeds, they root very shallow but sprout very fast. They sprout up first before everything else. The idea is they'll drown out all the other stuff or choke it out. But as soon as the sun comes out and there's no protection, they wither first because they're not rooted deeply into the groundwater. Yep. Whereas the wheat or the tree or the bigger thing has got a source it can draw from. So if you grow fast and you see them coming into every organization, whether it's a church or a business or a community organization, or it's somebody who's new to YouTube or TikTok, and they get a little bit of success really early, and then 6 months later they've disappeared. Because there's no substance, there's no deep.
So there's actually no danger in.
There's a danger in that. So the TikTokification and the YouTubeification, the internetification of what we do actually encourages weeds and not true growth.
Yeah, and so this is so deep because you can look at it from so many different areas in our lives where in a relationship people are looking for shortcuts, in business people are looking for shortcuts. In finance, people are looking for shortcuts. That's why everybody's out in the casino trying to gamble real quick.
Yeah. Relationships particularly are really important for this because I'm up to my 19th relationship now.
Oh, talk to me.
So I'm actually an expert at relationships.
19.
Because I've had more relationships than anyone I know. So I'm an expert at them. Now you say, well, you can't be much of an expert if you had 19 of them because clearly I'm an expert at breaking up. I'm very good at starting relationships. I'm really good at ending them, but I'm not really good at keeping them. And that's been my problem.
So, from your analysis of yourself, when you sit down and review and be like, okay, 19 relationship, Forget even 19. When you got number 15, 16, 17. And every time you break up, you would sit down. Do you do introspective work? Do you
sit there? No, of course not. Because it wasn't my fault. I wasn't the asshole. Never. I'm the hero of my own story, man.
After 19 times.
Yeah. Even after. Well, I think what happened is that after number 18.
Yeah, that's when.
That's when I looked in and went, oh.
Common denominator.
I'm the asshole.
Yeah.
I'm the problem.
So
it took that long.
Let's dig into that. So. Yeah. Relationship number one, all the way to 18 before you had a realization. What was going on? What was the pattern there?
It's the typical thing of my early life. They chose me. They pursued me. They wanted to be with me. So I just went along with it. Mm. So, you know, like you can, a lot of people would describe their life like this. I was in high school. I went to university. I went, got my trade. I was working. And next minute I was married with three kids and had a house in the suburbs and superannuation. Like all of a sudden there's this like, there's this bit that suddenly skipped and you had all this stuff and you go, and you don't remember ever making a decision about getting any of that stuff. Like you don't remember. It just sort of happened, right? You've been running on this autopilot for all those years.
Why is there a fear? Well, is there a fear? Why are people not choosing?
Because choices are hard because you might make the wrong choice. If you make the wrong choice, what does that say about you? You know, you're terrible. You're a failure. You know, that's what we think. Of course, you know, you and I know now that that's not the case.
Yeah.
But that's you're paralyzed by choice, even right down to going to the supermarket and choosing a peanut butter. What do you do when you go into choose? You probably don't eat peanut butter because it's not that great for you. But you go into Coles, you go to buy peanut butter. What do you usually do? You buy the one you always bought. Now, do you remember ever making a choice to first buy that peanut butter? Of course not. You probably grew up with it. It's the one that your mum used to give you. And so you keep buying that peanut butter. So whatever you took from before, you just keep replaying that tape over and over and over every time you go to the supermarket. I do it now. I walk straight in the supermarket. What do you do first? You turn left into the bakery section. You get your bread. Then you go through the fruit and veg section. Then you follow the path around the store up and down the aisles until finally you go to the checkout. You follow the same aisles, the same choices, buying the same crap every week without questioning it. Until, say, Pepsi Max puts out a mango version. You go, I'm going to try the mango.
You think you changed?
Look at me going all wild and having mango Pepsi Max. It's like that's the kind of autopilot we go on, but that's just for shopping. Then there's education, the autopilot of education, the autopilot of your career, the autopilot of your relationships. And you wonder when you get to 40 while everything falls down around you is because you've only woken up and gone, I've done more than half of my life. If the average age is about 83, well, at 40, you're already in the bottom half. So
that's a sad truth, actually.
Yeah.
When you put it that way, it's sad and the fear of choosing and feeling like you made the wrong decision.
Yeah, it's paralyzing.
Paralyzing.
And so you go all the way back and you go, well, I never made those choices. I can't remember making those choices because I didn't. I just went with whatever the flow was at the time. That's why I hate the term go with the flow. Because you know what I picture when I see go with the flow? Shit going down a sewer pipe. That's what go with the flow means to me.
London!
Yeah, that's all you see.
That's true.
That's all I see. It's like it has no choice, no agency, no. It just goes with the flow. And I'm like, why would you live life like that? That's a horrible way to live life.
I've heard that before in dating when people come in and be like, what are we doing? Yeah, let's just see what happens.
No intention.
Let's just see what happens. Just take it slow, and we'll figure it out.
And you wonder why it never goes anywhere. Right? Because I'm just sitting over here waiting for you to stuff up so I can blame you for get me out of this. And you're waiting for me to stuff up so that you can get out of it without consequences. So we never connect and we never do anything. We never grow. But all we have in common is that we think each other would look good naked in bed with us. That's what we base it on. You got a pretty face.
Yeah.
You got an all right body. Okay. You'll do.
And that, where's the source of that? Where's that rooted in? That fear is rooted in what?
Well, if we go for attractions and things like that, there's a bit of a root in that we tend to marry our parents.
Yeah, I've heard
of that. Yeah, we tend to marry. Not because we think our mother's beautiful or we're in love with them. We're not going to go down the Jungian psychology path of that or the Freudian psychology of it. It's more of a case of, well, we grew up with that. That's what we saw as the nurturer, the provider. There are all those really early influences on us. So, of course, we're going to look for that because we don't want to make decisions. We didn't have to make decisions when we were a kid. We just got told. So we actually want to do the same when we get into the relationship. We want to go with the flow because if we go with the flow, no one can blame us.
There's no resistance.
And if the marriage falls down, it's because she's a bitch.
Yeah.
He's an asshole.
And you did that 18 times.
Yeah, and I did it 18 times until before I finally woke up and went, oh, I'm the bitch.
What clicked?
Because there was a big gap between 18 and 19. So we're talking about 5 years. 5 years, I dated.
Yeah.
I became very active on certain apps and sort of replicated what I got the affection I could by giving away the one thing I could give away easily to get that affection I needed. But none of that led anywhere because everyone you meet who is also doing the same thing, they don't want to connect with you. They just want someone to hold and they'll use sex to get that. So I did the same.
Service level.
Yeah, yeah. So we were basically servicing each other. We were providing each other a service, just no one was paying for it. You're just paying for your discomfort and the occasional STI. But it's like that got to the point where I then met someone when I was on a work trip in Adelaide and I had a great, like, I travel a lot for work. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that my nights in hotels were always spent alone because they weren't. You know, because it's, these days it's easy. It's an app. It's like Uber, right? You just order it in and then they come. And one of those cases where I was on this work trip in Adelaide, I met the person who's now my partner. And we met at a shopping center in a cafe. And I don't know. It was just different. It was different. I hadn't experienced the same. It wasn't an instant attraction at all. We weren't all that into each other. Like I could ask him today and said, did you think I was hot when you met me? He said, oh, you're okay. He's very blunt. And I'd say the same. It's like, yeah, you're okay. There was a cuteness about you. But I said, what I really liked is that at the end of that date, we walked away from each other separate directions. We both looked back at the same time and had that moment of something's different there. And so I went back to Darwin. He's still in Adelaide. And we just kept chatting, kept talking with each other, kept in contact. Then came a phone call, then came a revisit to Adelaide where I went down specifically to meet with him and we sort of went, okay, is this a thing? Are we doing a thing? And it's like, oh, maybe we're 5% of a thing for now. And this is a little game we played. We played a little the percentage game because I kind of knew I'd fallen in love really early. Like I was like, it's there. I've felt this so many times before. I know what this is. So, yeah, but he wouldn't go with that. He wouldn't go with I'm in love because he'd never had a relationship before. He'd not fallen in love. And so he gave me a percentage. Every time we talk, we communicate, we'd get on the phone or a WhatsApp call or we'd catch up in person, I'd earned a certain percentage of points up towards 100. So, like, one day we got to 25%. I'm like, that's cool. And what I wanted to do, I really wanted to do everything to get those points higher. And eventually we got to the point and he said it's 80%. I said, is that enough? He said, maybe, but I've stopped seeing other people now. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And another little thing kicked in. When I hit 70%, I went and got relationship counseling with someone here in Darwin. Rachel Jacoby, if you want to know who it is.
Yeah.
Freaking amazing. And I said, I don't need to fix a relationship, but I'm about to do one. And I'm really shit at relationships. I need to be prepared for this one because I don't want to have to do this again. I'm getting old now. I don't want to have to do this again. It's exhausting. And
well, a lot of people feel like that. It's exhausting.
Yeah. 4.5 years later,
yeah.
We still laugh and banter and take the piss out of each other every night before we go to sleep.
So let's, for viewers watching that are thinking, hold on, what did he do differently that changed, that shifted his life? Let's have a look at it.
Mm.
So from the 18th to the 19th relationship,
mm.
You had more space, so there was a gap of space.
Yeah.
You went to see a counselor.
Yeah.
What's another thing?
I'll say the first thing was that we couldn't immediately make this a thing because we weren't in the same city. We were thousands of kilometers apart.
And did that help?
Oh, gosh, yeah. because it made us talk. You couldn't just default to all the lovey-dovey oxytocin flowing stuff where you're constantly cuddling and kissing and, you know, the other stuff.
Yeah,
you couldn't just fall into that. You had to communicate. So before we learned how to, and sorry, I'm going to go into down to the weeds here a bit, but before you can learn to have sex, you know, we learned how to talk.
Talk.
We had to learn how to communicate. We had to learn about each other before we learned how to make love. And that was a vast, vast difference. That was different than anything I'd ever done before.
So you learn how to communicate and then you got some counseling.
Yep.
What's the third one?
So the third one would be then I actually chose and pursued and chased.
Okay.
I'd never chased any relationship ever in my life, ever. They choose me. I don't choose them.
So you went from being emotionally avoided to...
I knew what I wanted. I didn't understand why I wanted him so much. I had no freaking idea, but I just did. I went, okay, I'm going to go put some effort into this. And it worked.
Wow.
And this is now the equivalent longest relationship I've ever had. Which in 1 month, it'll be the longest officially that I've ever had.
It'll be
4 years and 6 months.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Progressing. And it's tough. What stands out for me is the fact that after the 18th relationship, it didn't have to take 18, but everything has its timing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you finally realized that you didn't want to go through that emotion of...
Something had to change. And I'd assumed that everyone else had to change. In my mind, they were the problem, they were the issue, they were the cheater, they were the... But, you know, to be honest, in those relationships, I was an asshole too. Like, I was really calculating when I was young, super calculated. I was like that with people too. I knew how to manipulate people. So even if I wanted to get out of a relationship, I wasn't the asshole who ended it, they were. But I did everything for months to get them to do that. So it was horrific. I was a horror.
And you would do that because you didn't have the balls.
Not just I didn't want the ball. I wanted to be the good guy.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the hero of my own story.
And
I got to be.
And I know many people live life like that.
Yeah.
And they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because I was doing some relationship counseling as well for an individual, and they were telling me, oh, I don't think she knows what she's doing. I was like, I think people know what they're doing sometimes.
Mm.
Like, I think most of the times people know what they're doing. They know when they're pushing the wrong button consistently, trying to get you to walk absolutely. Away. And it's good to hear from your side as being the person that was doing that.
Absolutely. I was gaslighting my way through my entire 20s and 30s.
Yeah,
I was gaslighting everyone around me, my employers. I was gaslighting my employees. I was gaslighting my relationships, my family, everyone. I had a lot of them convinced that they were the problem.
And
they walked out. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, I would be the hero. Yeah.
Yeah. And so gaslight everybody else so that you remain the hero in your story.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be, and if you felt like you weren't the hero, would there be a feeling of shame?
Absolutely. It wasn't even an option. Like, I never got to not be the hero. I always got to be the hero. Because I was always smarter, more manipulative, more conniving.
Mm.
I moved faster because I had the brain to do it. My brain did that. I could, look at this day where I'm sitting with you and I plot out the next 5 years of what this leads to, what the consequences are, what the purpose is and all that. That's the way I live my life constantly. These days we call it ADHD, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would catastrophize things to the point where I know how this will end, so I need to adjust this one conversation with this one person to avoid that catastrophic end. And the catastrophic end was me not being the hero of my own story.
Mm. So when you've decided to change that and live a different story,
yeah,
there would have been just as much fear that you might not be the hero this time. What if it doesn't work out? Take us through the what if season.
So the what if. Well, before the what if, there had to be another significant change. So I had the awakening in 2014, and then I had the, I don't know, call it the reckoning. in 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
So something very key happened in 2020 to the world. We all know what that was. Yeah. So in 2019, my workplace at the time that I was contracting to said, hey, we're going to pay for you to go and do this course down in Brisbane. So I went and did this course. It's like a three-day, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, and then come back on Tuesday, and your life has all changed, all different. And I went in there going, this is going to be a load of shit. This is going to be absolute psycho-corporate nonsense. About 15 minutes in, I couldn't shut my head up from trying to tell me this is bullshit, I'm not going to do this. And they went, do it. Just do it. Just what's it going to do? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Just do it. You get a few days in Brisbane to chill away from work. Just do it. I walked out of that experience, that course, significantly a different person than when I arrived. I had called up my parents and apologized to my parents for being such an asshole of a teenager. I called up three exes and apologized profusely to them for the way I treated them and the way I manipulated them, and we were crying on the phone. I'm now friends with all three of those exes. We're now regular friends, not just, you know, Facebook friends, but we will actually call each other on our birthdays, all that sort of stuff. There was so much healing as a part of that. And I went and did another extension to that course a couple of months later, and that was in February 2020, just before the world went crazy. And I will credit that experience to not only doing that turnover, but that then allowed me to realize that exactly who I was. So there's who I'm meant to be. I kind of got a sense of that in 2014, but I really understood who I was in 2020.
What was the course?
The Landmark Forum. So some people have been through it and they call it a cult. I didn't see anything cultish about it. You can go into it and stay like a church, right? You can go in and you can go Sunday and every Sunday and be happy, or you can go Sunday and then you go Sunday night and then you go Tuesday night and you go Thursday night and you do youth on Friday night, and you can go crazy. I've only done the two courses. That's enough for me. I got what I needed. That transformation came through.
Yeah. And tell us about the what if. So
You
went through that transformation and then the what if came.
So the what if was, what if I stopped that day everything that I did that made me that person, the manipulative, the gaslighter, the liar, chronic liar, that guy. What if he stopped today and this new one started? The one that recognizes that he has incredible amount of light. He has an incredible amount of intelligence. You imagine if I had have actually channeled all of that energy into manipulating and blaming people for my shortcomings, if I had to channel that into something amazing, I could have changed the world. Mm. So what if that guy then, and there, but also understanding my darkness, not just my light, all the good fluffy unicorns and rainbows, but the fact that I'm a sexual being, I am a relational being, I am someone who needs... I'll just call it validation. I like to be patted on the head and called a good boy. I like the applause, all those things. Instead of looking at those as things I thought were terrible and bad, but that I would always be chasing, but they were bad, I went, wait, they're not bad. In and of themselves, they're not bad. But I was seeking that applause by doing really manipulative, quite evil things. So I get that attention, that affection, and all that validation by doing horrible things. What if we stop doing that? What if we accept that you need these things, but we do the things that help, that heal, that connect, that are based on love rather than based on trying to survive some imaginary catastrophe that I think is going to happen in my life if I stop manipulating everything around me?
Yeah.
And then it changed. I've never been the same since.
Wow.
So I found God a little later than what I originally planned, but I found God. But he, she, they, them, there wasn't anything like I expected.
So what's the difference between the God you found and the God you were taught when you were still in the church?
I thought God was outside of me. God was this distant, you know, a distant, it's the father that so many of us grew up with. That's what God was like, because God the Father. So what do you think of God the Father? I think of my father.
Yeah.
And my father, who was emotionally distant, disciplinary, all those kind of things. And some people, like, their father is far worse than that. Like, they're abusive, you know, manipulative, you know, horrible things. Uh-huh. And then there's some people who had magical experiences with their fathers. They grew up, they went fishing with them, they do everything with them. So they would think that God's awesome. Meanwhile, I saw God as emotionally distant and never understanding me and constantly trying to talk me to do things I don't want to do. So, of course, I never found God because it wasn't that.
It wasn't what you're used to. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different thing.
We took a picture of our physical father and made that God.
Yeah. Look at when we imagine God, we imagine the usually a white guy with a long beard, right?
Who gave him the beard?
Who gave him the beard?
Damn, I'm questioning my beard, man.
Like, I'm a white guy with a beard. Does anyone call me God?
So, the difference between the God you found and the God you knew from church. Give us three things.
Okay, first thing was that the God wasn't outside of me. God was there. I am. Yeah. I am.
Yeah.
The reason why, you know, it's translated from Yahweh to I am.
Yeah.
I am God.
Yeah.
You are God. Yeah. I am also you, and you are also me.
Yeah.
And I am this chair and this carpet and this background.
Yeah.
All those things. So it's a one great big fuzzy thing. It's not like a separate thing. It's not separate.
There's no separation.
You and I are not separate.
Yeah.
You know, I could shake your hand and it feels like that we are different beings, right?
Yeah.
But at the quantum level, the only thing that's keeping us separated is opposing electrons and electricity.
Mm-hmm.
But really what should happen, my hands should be melting into each other by now, except that have an agreed upon rules of the universe that say that they are separate, they're different things.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you that at the quantum level, there's no difference. There's no difference between us. We're all made of this. We are all basically formed from the same stardust from the sun, which is formed from the stardust of the beginning of the universe. So we're all the same.
So number one is God is within and there's no separation.
Yeah.
What's number two?
We have so much choice with what we get to do. There is so much choice, but we've convinced ourselves that we're not. We have spent our entire existence convincing ourselves that we are not God and have no choice and no agency, and we are just subject to fate. You know, everything is laid out for us. We've got words for it: fate, destiny. You're destined to do this. Oh, she was born for this. None of us are born for anything except to breathe and eat and shit and cry and sleep. Those are the only things we're born to do. We're a blank slate, absolute blank slate, limited only by our genetics. And even then, you know, you see people who have the genetic problems and they go on and do incredible things. Just watch the Paralympics and see what people can do when they are limited, but they decide not to be limited anymore.
They're still limitless.
Yeah. We're so convinced that we're not God and that we don't have choices that we've forgotten who we are. We forget who we are. We have no idea who we are. So now I recognize that we can do all of these things.
Yeah, yeah. So number one, God is within and there's no separation. Number two, we've got more choices than there appears to be.
And more power.
More power.
Way more choice, agency, and power than what we ever thought we'd have.
People actually don't want to accept that.
Oh, gosh, no.
We have choices.
Well, then it's our fault. When it stuffs up, when it messes up, when we fail, when someone leaves us, when we get sacked from our job, when we don't make as much money as we want to, when our business fails, when we get up on a stage and start speaking and freeze in place and don't know what to do, well, that's our fault. Whereas I can go and say, oh, I've got trauma. I've got generational trauma. That's why I can't do these things. Or I've got an injury. Or I grew up and I only had four toes instead of five toes. It's so awesome to be able to blame something else because you never truly have to take responsibility.
But this is where there's a lot of divide when it comes to these topics because everybody wants to say that they're traumatized by something.
I'm traumatized. I was molested between the age of 7 and 14.
Hey, shalugo.
So, like, I get trauma. I know what that feels like.
But still, it's a choice.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, yeah, but you still had your white privilege and you grew up in your loving family. I went, yeah. And yet I still had that happen. Okay. So it's like we have so much more agency, but we're forgotten. We forgot who we were. We forgot that we're God.
So what's the third thing?
So the third thing that I really woke up to was that if God is not separate from me and I forgot that I am God and I've got all these choices, why the hell am I living the life I'm living? Why the hell am I just falling into relationship? Why the hell am I doing this? Why am I working for these people who hate me and I hate them? Why am I doing all these things I hate? And that was the ha. I don't have to. What would actually happen if I stepped away from that 13.5-year career into the unknown? What would happen? What's the worst that can, like, seriously, what's the worst going to happen in this country, right?
The unknown.
Yeah. You got the dole if you can't get back up. You got the dole. I got family. I can move in with my parents and to go back home with my tail between my legs. And my mum and dad love me to be around more often.
Yeah.
Like, what's the actual consequences in this country? What are the consequences of failure? You're not going to die.
I think the consequences for many people is the fear, social acceptance.
That's your status. Your status is all removed.
They're fearing. Yeah. How are people going to look at me? They're going to think I'm a failure. They're going to think I will never make it.
So the consequences of me stepping away and making all those changes was that the person I was would be destroyed. Well, I think, you know, it was bleedingly obvious that that needed to happen because that wasn't working out too well for me 18 relationships later, and I was still miserable, still alone, obese, getting diabetes and miserable and angry, so angry at so many things and doing things I didn't want to do.
So you almost had to die to the old self, like essentially that old Dante had to be let go of.
This is where we come full circle, right?
Yeah.
What is baptism? It's a symbolic death. It's the death of the old self, so you may be born again. My old self had to die in order for me to be born again.
Yeah.
13.5 years of amazing work with an organization where I felt I had impact and value.
Yeah.
And I was forgotten within a month. Like, it was they got rid of me so easily. It was so easy. So easy. It just turned around. It was like a 3-month period where I went from being the golden child of that organization to basically they're pushing me out.
Dude, we don't need you. Move on.
Yeah. It can happen so quick.
And that's when you started realizing the value of investing in yourself?
Well, the value of basically that everything you've done, everything you ever will do essentially means nothing. You ascribe meaning to that. So if you get to set your own meaning, then you get to make your own life. You go, okay, so what have I got to do to make that happen? If I'm not confident, how do I get confident? If I'm obese and all over the place and can't even walk up a set of stairs, what do I do to get over that? What are the steps? What are the first things I'm going to do? Because I know damn well from experience that the first steps are going to hurt way more than the 50th steps.
Yeah. So you're quite an interesting figure because you found God through a very interesting journey, and your definition of God varies from the general Christianity, and even the way you live your life is a lot of people that are from a Christian background watching this will be like, oh, that's not what I was told.
Oh, no.
This can't be it.
That's why I don't have a church, man, because it'd be a weird ass church. Gosh.
And let me just shine some light on the way you live your life. And so obviously early on you spoke about when you were young, discovering your sexuality and realizing that you're a bit different than what you thought. Mm. And then so what happened after your awakening, after you had that awakening?
Gosh, so you're talking about 19 when I first did something about it. Mm-hmm. So this is where it gets complex because I was molested at a young age, right?
Yeah.
I've had to work with this weird thing of going, did that make me gay? Or was that, did that happen because I was gay? And so there's this, why did this happen? And I since have let go of that. It's not about why it happened. I just go, well, it happened. It happened. I can't change that. I can take all sorts of revenge on the people that were responsible for that. And it wouldn't change a freaking thing. It wouldn't change them. It wouldn't change me. So I go, okay, well, it's like that saying that it is what it is. I don't like that as an excuse for anything. It is what it is because I've got more agency than that. I chose to go all Elsa on that and let it go. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I chose to let that go because I'd spent so much time just pushing it down because it was, what did I do to make that happen? Like everyone who's been through any sort of SA, they go, what did I do to make that happen? What did I do? How did I dress? How did I act? So the part of me that wants to go, okay, well, it's because I am gay that they selected me because of that. I was a soft target. I went through that. And then there's also the, well, maybe it's just something I am and that's okay, to the point now where it's going, well, I actually kind of like it. Like it's not hurting my life.
Yeah.
And the way I live my life doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm freed up to do things in my life because I don't have the choice of having kids for various reasons, not the gay thing. You can as a kid have kids.
Yeah.
But I cannot physically have kids. It's something I'm not capable of doing.
Yeah.
So because I don't have that in my life, what else do I do? I can live the selfish life and, you know, travel on gay cruises around the world and go to the gay parties around the world and wear leather and I don't know what they do. I've seen the pictures. That's all I can say. I've seen some pictures and videos and I'm just going, I don't think that's me at all, but so good on her.
Last time I spoke to you, you mentioned that you don't quite align with the LGBT and what they stand for as a whole.
Yeah, the alphabets, I call them. Because there's a new letter gets added on every year and the flag changes every year. There's new color or a new, so now there's a circle on it. It's just ridiculous. It's just like this ridiculous level of, yeah, it's so much crazy in that. It's just, I'm going to get some hate, man. I'm so sorry. You're all beautiful and wonderful, but we're not going to get each other and I'm cool with that. As long as you can be cool with that too. But I think there's just as much room for someone to accept they're not part of your rainbow than it is for someone to accept that they are.
So this is interesting because a few minutes ago you were talking about being gay. You don't, as much as you don't quite like the label, being gay and being different and then you don't quite associate with the movement. Yeah. I don't want to say what's wrong with the movement because I get every movement starts with a certain purpose. Usually people go away from the original purpose.
And that becomes an industry.
Correct. And so obviously what doesn't align with you when it comes to that movement?
I don't feel the need to march for anything.
Yeah.
I don't feel the need to yell at people and tell them they should call me certain things and not call me certain things. I don't care if someone doesn't like me because I'm gay. It's none of my business what they think of me until they want to try and harm me, and then it becomes my business. But I don't need legislation to make that work. And when I grew up, my grandmother and grandfather lived next door to a gay couple. We didn't know that's what they were. Yeah. Kevin and Roy, their names were.
Yeah.
Lived next door to my grandparents. Mm-hmm. And it's like this little secret. All the adults knew this.
Yeah.
But Kevin and Roy were awesome people. They were so friendly. They had the most perfect garden. Their house was immaculate. And they were happy. They were such happy people. And they were friendly and all that. And any sort of interactions we had with them as kids and all that were beautiful. They were just friendly. They would wave to us. They'd say hello. They'd ask us, oh, you played soccer last weekend. Beautiful, beautiful men.
And it's funny that as a kid, you remember them for being good people.
Yeah, absolutely. For their sexuality. So that my first encounter, but I didn't even know that was a thing. I'm 5 years old. What do I know about that? So for me, they lived completely without rainbows and Mardi Gras and pride festivals, and they didn't have any of that. And they lived a completely wonderful life. From everything I could see, they didn't have any rights as a couple, sure. But they seemed completely blissfully happy.
Yeah.
They didn't need the accoutrements of all that. They didn't need to wear a rainbow flag cape. They didn't need their flame to burn brightly in order for them to live their life.
Yeah.
And there's almost like when I look at the same gendered couples and trans couples and all that I know of that live quiet lives.
Yeah.
Are so happy. They are so happy. Those who are not connected to that rainbow community.
Yeah.
Are the happiest ones of them all. The ones that are most connected to the rainbow are the ones who are angry, constantly in drama, constantly battling with everybody around them. It's just this constant struggle. And they will tell you that they're constantly struggling for all of us. But I don't see what a rainbow pavement does for me. I don't see what a pride festival does for me. Oh, it makes us visible. You can't be what you can't see. Well, I did when I was 5 years old. I saw a couple that were beautiful and happy. That was the best way of advertising that. Not a rainbow, not a flag, not a pink triangle, not all that.
So true advertisement should come from character.
So this is where my biblical angle and my gay angle kind of converge, right?
Yeah.
What is the way that the early Christians brought people into the early church? House to house, family to family, person to person. Not movements, not big rallies with circus tents, not festivals and marches, not by doing legislation that made them out to be the only source of truth, not by organization. It was just small groups of people that, what was it? I'm trying to remember the quote, but they will know that you're mine because of the way you love each other.
Yeah.
And so they loved each other.
I know what you're trying to quote, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's been a little while since I read the Bible.
Story, what's the quote?
The world will know that you're mine by the way you love each other.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah, 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 yeah. And so I look at that and I go, well, gay people are horrible to each other. We are horrible. We eat our own, man. We just will tear each other down. You get into any committee for a pride festival or something, and the lesbians are against the gays are against the trans. There's a person over there who refuses to accept they, them, theirs as part of the rainbow. And then the they, them, theirs are yelling and screaming back at the people who are saying you should. It's awful. It's a bloodbath.
It's a circus, man.
Oh, my God. These committees, yeah, they go through people like I go through underwear, man. Just, it's horrible. It's this unnecessary mess that doesn't need to be there because it serves no purpose anymore.
Yeah.
I was called into, okay, whew, I'm going to be hated for this. So I was called into the Darwin Pride Festival committee some years ago to help them decide whether they should shut it down or not. Now, that was great. I was consulting to them as an outsider, being completely honest. And at the end of that, they kind of got to the point where, well, no, we see there's value still in this.
Yeah.
And it's still running to this day, still doing pretty well. But inside myself, I was like, you serve no purpose. You're doing nothing but make people angry. You're doing nothing but separate yourselves from people. You're trying to constantly tell us how we should think, how we should talk. I'm done with you. I will not go to your festivals.
So how do you feel about those who, because I had some chats with people before and the word they used was discrimination. That if we don't do anything about what's happening, we are being discriminated.
Yeah. Then the opposite of that, if you don't talk the way we talk and think the way we think and accept that these people exist and deserve to have their pronouns recognized, therefore, you know, you are the problem. And I'm like, well, aren't you the one trying to tell me to do something? Isn't that you discriminating? You won't accept me because I won't use your pronouns? Who's the discriminating factor here?
Mm.
So it's my discrimination and your discrimination are very different to each other. Who's right? We both think we're right.
Yeah. And your example comes from when you were 5 years old watching that couple and realizing that, wow, you can be very happy.
Yeah.
While we're on the topic of happiness, let me ask you this.
Mm.
What is your happiest memory? That you look back on, you're like, I was really happy back then.
Now is? This is the happiest I've ever been. I actually had this conversation with my partner. Was it last night? We got home from an October Business Month event. Simon Griffiths, the guy who gives a crap, the toilet paper company.
Yeah.
He was awesome, and he had a formula for happiness, actually, funnily enough, and it was on the screen. Happiness equals autonomy plus mastery plus, I can't remember the third word. It's happiness equals autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And I look at that and I go, I have a lot of autonomy in my life right now.
Mm.
I've got really good mastery of what it is I do and how I do it. mastery over my own mind, mastery. I'm developing mastery over my body, developing mastery over business that I'm doing. And I have a bigger purpose. Any business can save the world. So what I've got to do is help businesses to save the world. What's not to be happy about?
Have you waken up a day in the morning and being like, I don't want to do this anymore? Have you had those days?
No. Every day. Not since 2020.
Wow.
Not since 2020. My partner is annoyed by the way I get out of bed in the morning. I've actually now had to moderate the way I get out of bed in the morning, because I get out of the bed in the morning, throw myself out of bed, and I'm like, bounce, 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 off to the toilet, bounce, 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 get in my gym clothes, bounce, bounce. Ready, babe? Let's go, let's go. Can't you come back to bed and cuddle for like 5 minutes? I'm like, nah, rest, let's go. I can't wait.
You're excited about
I cannot remember a day in the last 5 years where I haven't loved the fact that I've woken up to get into that day. I wake up at 5 a.m. every morning to go to the gym because I freaking love it. Because I love that. And then I go, and some mornings I'll go and sit at the Rabbit Hole Cafe and just sit there and wave to people I know, say good day, eat my scrambled eggs on toast, which costs way more than scrambled eggs on toast should cost. But you know what? That $30 breakfast is so worth it.
Inflation is crazy, man.
It's so worth it. So worth it. I love my life, man. It's freaking amazing.
And all this because you're choosing.
Yeah.
Because it's a choice. This is what you're choosing to live. This is how you're choosing to live your life.
This is a Friday afternoon, right?
Yeah.
We met at 1 o'clock this afternoon. We met, right? So if I was working a 9 to 5,
you couldn't do this.
I have a day of leave. I've got autonomy. I just tell the people I'm working for, I'm going to be out for a few hours. I'll see you at 4. And I just do it. I'm not asking for permission. I'm just letting them know I'm doing it. Autonomy. And thank you, Simon Griffiths, for actually putting this in a framework that I can actually see. Autonomy and purpose and mastery. You get those three things. And it's sweet. It's a sweet life. That's what I was saying to my partner last night. I said, man, I've got a sweet life.
Woo! Jalugo!
Mind you, I've got a shitbox of a car.
Why?
Because, you know, my life isn't based upon a nice car. I don't need a nice car.
You're not materialistic, hey?
I don't like things. So one thing when you have 18 relationships before you finally settle for your 19th is you have to move around a lot.
Yeah.
You're moving around a lot because, you know, you're falling in love like a drop of a hat. So you're moving to Sydney to be with someone, then you're moving to Brisbane to be with someone, then you're moving to Perth to do whatever. You're moving a lot. Moving costs a lot of money when you've got stuff.
Yeah.
So my framework for living a light life is that only ever have as much stuff that matters to you that you can fit in the back of a car. And that's it. That's the essentials of life, which means you don't get very connected to furniture. All our furniture is from Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
All of our, even like all the hanging racks for the clothes are from Kmart. They're just racks. They're not wardrobes or anything like that.
Yeah.
Anything like books, I've got that many books. And those books are ones I've kept for 20 years. They're books that have incredible meaning to me. But if I want to buy a book, I have to throw out a book. If I want to buy a t-shirt, I've got to throw out a t-shirt. If I want to buy a pair of jeans, I've got to throw out a pair of jeans.
Well,
that's what you do, yeah. Like throw out, I mean, it's no longer in my possession. It goes in the clothing bin. Yeah.
Yeah. So someone might be listening to this and say, oh, Dante, you don't understand what I've been through. You're living life on an easy mode.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course I am.
Oh, you accept it. You know you're going to defend that.
Why would you not? Why would you deliberately make your life harder than it has to be? We live in the most amazing time in history.
Yeah.
Every bit of knowledge about the whole world is on this like this phone, this little black mirror has access to all the knowledge ever created. Yeah. Knowledge is easy. Knowledge isn't locked away behind cloistered doors or anything like that. It's right there. So we know all this stuff. Why are
people looking for suffering?
Oh, because we have this idea that life is hard. Yeah, we grew up, right? What did our parents say to us? Our life's hard. Money doesn't grow on trees. You know, you got to work hard and make something of yourself. Why? I'm not growing crops in the desert. I'm not walking barefoot on gravel roads 7 kilometers there and back to go to school.
True.
I live in 2025.
True.
Yeah. I've got Uber. I got DoorDash, man. Why would I
just walk 30 kilometers, Daniel?
There you go. There you go. But he doesn't do it now.
Yeah. See, no, he doesn't want to come to the studio without a car.
Yeah. Hey, you got to book me an Uber, man. Air conditioning. I've got air conditioning.
Suffering right now is a choice. For many people, suffering right now is a choice. Obviously, if you're dealing with some physical illness and stuff, that's a bit different. Yeah. But for most people, when it comes to the mental side of things, suffering is a choice, would you say?
People who have some sense of agency in their life where they've got either the money, the situation, where they get choices to make, will still make shitty choices and make themselves suffer. They'll still do the crazy, crappy things that make them miserable and everyone around them miserable. They'll still go to the casino and blow $300 and not be able to make their rent. They'll still do stupid things until something changes. And quite often, like, some of us need the Damascus Road experience, right? We need that, you know, Saul becomes Paul. Mm. And we need those. Some of us need that. I'm that guy.
Yeah.
I had to wander aimlessly through life, destroying everything and burning everything around me before I finally came face to face with God, who funnily enough looked like me. And then, I'm now Paul.
Yeah.
Sorry to all those who don't know biblical references. This is probably going to make no sense to you.
I want. We're coming to the end of the podcast, and there's a famous question we ask in this podcast in every episode. So if you watch the episode, you know the question is coming. And let me ask you that question. Dante, when's the last time you cried?
Yesterday.
Talk to us about it.
Oh, it's going to sound so lame. I cry every day because I have this really bad habit of watching rescue dog videos.
Ah, come on, man. Come on. What the fuck? The way you set that up, man, I was thinking he's about to drop something deep.
It's freaking puppies, man. Puppies. Freaking puppies. Every freaking time will make me cry.
You have a
every time. No. Oh. And that's the stupid thing about it.
You know, all the black people watching this, they're going to be thinking, oh, white people. Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Puppies. Have all the significant, not the birth of my child, not rewatching the videos of my wedding, not, you know, the fact that the connection to my family and the love I have for them.
Puppies.
So lame.
And so what, before you sleep, you watch every video, watch a puppy video.
Oh, no. Usually the last thing I watch is something on YouTube to do with marketing or something. So that's usually, I go to bed dreaming of statistics, Google Analytics and vibe coding on Base 44 and Google Gemini. But that's the stuff I take to bed with me.
Yeah.
But what I do often find myself is going off into a place where I would distract myself with something inspirational, and the ones that make me cry are always the damn puppies being rescued.
So it's not a cats. Motivational speaker, no puppies.
Nah. Motivational speakers all start to sound the same after a while. Yeah. They're all saying the same thing. Believe in yourself, rise up and take control of your life.
It's all the same. It's funny that it's still effective and it's still a huge, massive industry.
Of course it is.
And that has to line up with what you were saying early on, that people are not choosing their life. So every time you're coming to them and says, choose you today, it hits them. Mm. And then they might choose themselves that day and then go back to the same pattern.
Yeah, exactly. You go in, you watch Tony Robbins, you walk across the hot coals with Tony Robbins. And what happens the next day? You go and do the same crap you've been doing for 20 years all over again, like you never did that thing. Because there's no framework to follow up with it. And that's the problem with motivational speakers. Yeah. They are employed to come in, speak and piss off. There's no follow-up, there's no program, there's nothing. This is what churches do this so much better than motivational speakers do, because churches at least have new people's networks and cell groups and things you can do and a community that kind of comes around you.
Most motivational speakers are just invited to just major events, and in major events they don't give you time to create a framework for people to follow. They usually just inspire people in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. If you're lucky, you get 30 minutes. Like
exactly. Yeah. There's I've told you about the Ripple Festival I'm speaking at Melbourne. One of the differences they've got is you get off stage and what you do, it's up to you if you want to do it. You go to a conversation corner.
Yeah.
So if anyone really wants to follow up with you, they can come and see you over in the conversation corner and you can continue that conversation with them. And it's a small step, but I think there's a responsibility that the motivational industry needs to take for itself.
Yeah.
It needs to stop convincing people that change is easy, because it's not.
And it's instant.
And it's not. Transformation is messy. Change is really simple. I can change today and then change back again tomorrow. Easy. But true transformation, that's messy. That takes time. That takes a little bit of focus and a little bit of understanding who you are. If you just want to change your circumstances, you got to be ready for it to hurt you a little. It's going to, like I said, I had to die before I was born again.
You've heard of the saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And with that being said, I think sometimes some of the words that have really affected me and caused massive transformation wasn't a course that I sat through that was 2 hours long. It was maybe the homeless man in the street in Chicago said one word to me, and that shifted. That stayed in my head for a long time. And I said to myself, it wasn't about what he said. It was about the readiness that was taking place within me. And I feel like many people aren't just ready for the message. They're not ready for the things that will shift and transform their life.
Exactly.
Because obviously, look at your relationship and 18 relationships in. Surely the God within you was speaking throughout all that time.
Of course.
And you chose not to listen.
Yeah. Very loudly, most of the time.
Oh, very loudly.
Yeah. Whoever that was, the voice of me, the voice of God, the voice of Allah, the voice of whoever, whoever it was yelling at me quite often. Like who? One final story I'll tell you because I know you've got to end this podcast.
Yeah.
So talk about 1998, right?
Yeah.
The Albury Hotel in Sydney, the center of gay life, drag shows, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Right, there's a piano bar around the back where a drag queen is there singing show tunes on a piano and all that. It's hilarious, all fun and all that. A guy walks up to me, comes out, looked like he was homeless. Sam sat down, he said, "Here you go, this book's for you. God told me to give you this book."
Just like that.
Yeah, just walked straight up to me as if he was ordained by God to come and give me that book. The book was a book called Round the Bend by a guy called Neville Shute. He wrote, more famously, A Town Like Alice is the book he wrote. He's most known for that in Australia.
Yeah.
So I thought nothing about it, took it home and went, okay, it sat, beside my bed. And then one night, I was having a really bad night. And normally that's the dark night of the soul kind of night where you might reach for your Bible or your Quran or something to find something. So I reached for that book that I'd left beside my bed and I started reading it. And I read the whole book like in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And that book was exactly the thing I needed at that time to get me through that dark night of the soul. It gave me a whole different perspective on religion, on life, on integration, collaboration, all concepts I really had nothing I'd not really experienced. The whole idea of someone from the outside looking at a religious movement forming around a bunch of airline engineers. Crazy story, but it was amazing. Who told him that I was going to need that book one night? That a night where I was considering unaliving myself, that book would be there. Who told him that? So yeah, God was yelling.
Yeah.
I was yelling.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed our content, please follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and TikTok. And if you really want to support us, please support us on Patreon, Subscribestar, and Crypto. I personally want to say thank you to all of you that are following us. And I want to make a promise that if you follow us, if you subscribe to our channel, that we will keep producing the best, highest form of quality content to add value to your life and help you find fulfillment in life. Thank you.